Backseat Producers, episode number 257, The Next 3 Days. Hey, this is Tony.
This is Daryl.
This is Tony.
We are the Backseat Producers.
Welcome.
How are you?
I am well.
How about you, Daryl?
Functional.
I'm doing good.
So, this week I went back and edited the Hobbit episode. And normally when I edit, I do a really light touch. You know, I do some automatic noise removal and then go through and just listen for obvious gaps. But for the most part, you know, conversations are our conversations. We don't tend to cut anything out for content, as, you know, anybody who listens to the show knows. But I went back and listened to that Hobbit. And it was one of those things that normally I start skipping through. I found myself like 45 minutes in, and it was just like, I might as well just listen to the whole thing.
Wow, so you didn't edit any of it?
I edited just a couple things.
Cut out the dead air and stuff, yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, the conversation was just solid. It's fun. I mean, that is a good conversation.
Your editing experience was probably a metaphor for the Peter Jackson editing experience of The Hobbit. So that's good.
Yeah.
It's consistent.
Yeah. And I stated on Twitter the other day, if we get nominated for another Parsec this year.
Doing Hobbit?
I'm going to do just the first 10 minutes of The Hobbit. Daryl's rant.
Dude, Daryl's rant's like one of my top 5 all-time moments on this show.
Jeez, I was so inspired.
It was awesome.
It was amazing. It really was. Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was great. In fact, we should clip that and use it as a promo. I'm just saying.
We probably should.
I'm just saying.
That's not a bad idea.
Daryl's comfortable with it.
That's not a bad idea. I may just do that.
I become an internet meme.
That's right.
Listen, bitches.
That one, yes. Yeah.
That's gonna be how the promo's gonna start.
You probably could drop it in the middle of this episode, and it would be just fine.
Yeah. So,
milk gets me off.
Yeah, that's right. You were drinking your milk, dude. You were like, boom, slamming your milk, and like, listen up. Oh, it was great.
You turned around and told Adam to shut the fuck up. I just kind of leaned back. I was like, I don't need to be here right now.
You're like, is he drunk? Like, on lactose.
Yes. I was having lactose high. Lactose intolerance. It's like
one of those aliens from Alien Nation getting drunk on curdled milk.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm all milked up.
All milked up.
So has anybody seen anything new recently?
I got to think about this for a moment, actually. I know I have.
New. I was going to go catch Django this weekend and get ready for that before it leaves the theaters.
Yeah, yeah. Julie and I went to, there's a place here in Belleville that has one of those bistro experiences.
Oh, yeah. When I saw The Hobbit at the AMC, that 16 that I go to, they've just now recently converted to that fork and knife format.
Yeah, it was really cool. And really reasonably priced. I understand, like, the ones out in West County are, like, $20 a ticket or something like
no,
that.
No, 12.
Oh, is it 12?
It's $12 for the ticket, and then you have the courtside service. The theaters, they've rearranged them. They only have about maybe a third of the seats that they normally would
right.
have in there. Each one has a its own separate courtside service. You have a small call button,
mm-hmm.
and it's got a very low lighting table, which you just summon your server. They come order from the menu, or if you want to refill on your popcorn or refill on your drink, they'll do it right
yeah,
then and there.
So we did this Friday night. My folks were like, Holden had a half day, and they're like, hey, can we have the kids Friday night? I was like, sure. So we decided to just go to a movie, and we went there, and they were playing Silver Linings Playbook. And at first we were like, she was like, I don't really know if I want to see that. I said, well, I kind of do, but I figured, because she, every time the commercial came out, she kind of, you know, made this face that told me that I was going to be watching this on Netflix when it came out, one of those. So I was like, well, let's give it a shot. And yeah,
you don't make faces at De Niro. De Niro gets to make faces at you. Yeah. Those are the rules. Anyway, proceed.
$12 a ticket. It was $1 more if you order online, but you get to choose your seats.
Right.
So that was cool. There were 5 rows, 12 seats in a row, so 60 seats. All of the chairs are leather recliners. Mm-hmm. And you pair up, so it's like you have 2 recliners that are together with a central armrest that can be lifted. And then there's walkways between. There's walkways in front and back. So when the wait staff comes in, you can see somebody walking in front of you, but they're not in the way at all.
Right.
Yeah. They're not in your
way.
They're
like down.
Oh yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
And the food service is not bad.
The food service was pretty good. Well, the Edge, the place that in Belleville, it's a laser tag, arcade, bar, theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
something for everybody.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of stuff going on. Well, the bar it's a bar restaurant, so you're getting that food.
Well, yeah, that's the other nice thing too. Now they do serve alcoholic beverages. If you want a cocktail, you can get one of those. You can beer, wine, mixed drinks, whatever. They're a little on the pricey side, but yeah, I don't think it's all that bad.
Right. So we didn't get dinner before we went. We got dinner there. Mm-hmm. We ordered before the movie started. The movie started and the food came just 5-10 minutes into the trailer of the movie.
Oh, okay.
There was just a couple of trailers. They didn't show many trailers in this. But just a couple minutes into the film, the food came. And I was thinking, oh, I'm just going to get a sandwich and then I'll have some popcorn later. Well, the sandwich came with a salad. So I got a sandwich and salad. Julie got some pretzels and this like meat and cheese tray. Mm. We left food, didn't get popcorn. It was like our food bill was like $30.
Not bad for a typical restaurant bill.
Yeah,
$15 a piece.
It was a typical restaurant bill. If we would have gone out to a restaurant, we would have gone out, had dinner, paid probably the same price, if not a little more for dinner, then would have went to the theater, paid probably a buck or two less for regular theater tickets. Because regular theater tickets are like $11, and we paid $12 a piece plus a $1 upcharge, so...
I mean, that's not bad at all.
The prices were comparable. And then we didn't get anything else because normally we get some. Then we, at the theater, we get something to drink and popcorn. It's like we didn't need any of that because we already had it all. Yeah. So we probably saved money. And those recliners were really nice and comfortable. It was funny because every once in a while you'd hear that sound of leather on leather as people were bringing their seats up and down. But yeah, it was real laid back and comfortable.
Well, also, you don't have to sit there for the concession stand, waiting in line for
exactly.
that. I've noticed that when...
you just walk right in.
AMC, when they did it, they've eliminated all the concession stands now.
Yeah, there was the place really? Where we're at, mm-hmm. there's no concession. We went, there's no concession. Mm-hmm. There was a person sitting behind a counter that basically took our tickets, or if you mm-hmm. wanted to buy a ticket, you'd buy them from that person, mm-hmm. and that was it. Mm-hmm. There was no concession. The concession was handled by the wait staff. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a better way to go about it.
Oh, yeah.
The truth. I'd rather pay.
It's almost going
tip.
Back to
a couple minutes before the, like 10 minutes before the end of the movie, they came around and they put the bill on the armrest. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, as soon as the credits start rolling, you sign off and you're ready to go. Mm-hmm.
It's almost going back to the way people used to do shows, you know, programs in the old days.
Yep.
You sit, you know, and have a cocktail table and, you know.
Oh, I'm like, after the experience I had there, Man of Steel.
That's yes. where your head is.
I am going to enjoy it.
Now, when's that coming out?
It comes out this summer.
I don't
know the exact date.
We've got a whole slate of great stuff coming out.
My nexus is yelling at me for not knowing that.
See, that's the Google Now right
there.
That's
Google Now.
It's that smart.
It knows. It's answering the question.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then Silver Linings Playbook, solid.
Solid
flick. Jennifer Lawrence, who she's been in a couple things. She was in Winter's Bone. She was in X-Men First Class. She was the young Mystique.
Yes.
And she was in The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. So now in Hunger Games, I didn't really care for the character that much.
I didn't see that movie.
And my opinion of her was that she kind of doesn't have any talent because the character is kind of lifeless and dead-eyed. And she's good in X-Men First Class, but her role is pretty small. It's not a big role. That's such a huge cast. But in this, she was good. So turns out that it's just the character Katniss that's the dead-eyed slug and not Jennifer Lawrence so much. And from what I've heard, Winter's Bone is good, and I want to check that out now.
Yeah, I've heard that one's good. I'd like to see that one.
I was not sure what to expect with this movie. I really didn't. I went in knowing very little about it, and it was really good. Bradley Cooper was excellent. The acting all around was great. Bradley Cooper was good. Jennifer Lawrence was good. De Niro, of course, was De Niro.
Yeah, but you're never going to say De Niro was horrible.
He was not as De Niro as he normally is. He played an obsessive compulsive.
Yeah,
and it was like really well done.
Well, have you seen Awakenings De Niro? Is that
yeah.
what he's in? Yeah.
With Robin Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of different De Niro. The most popular one is the guy from the Jersey Shore who kills people, but it's that
softer De Niro who really wants to be a good guy, but he's still kind of an asshole.
Right.
You know, it's that De Niro, which he does really well.
Yes.
He does very well. Chris Tucker's in this.
Nice.
And he plays an older, a little more mellow, but still very Chris Tucker kind of character. Still kind of a little high strung, but appropriately so because he and Bradley Cooper, the way they know each other, is they were in a mental institution together.
Nice.
He keeps showing up. And they're like, hey, you got out. And he's like, yeah. And he gives this long, rambling explanation. And like 10 minutes later, people show up and they're like, yeah, he broke out again.
Nice.
And it's like, it's he's not violent or anything.
I'm just glad to hear that he's around.
Yeah, I was like, I hadn't seen him in forever. It was like, wow.
He held out for maybe even years to do Rush Hour 3. He was asking for a staggering amount of money.
Mm.
And then I guess after that, his work was very limited. I don't know. I don't know the whole
story. Man, if this is how he's coming back into it, it was solid. It was really good. Good performance. Yeah, I really liked it.
I think all I'll say is my wife saw The Impossible and said it was awesome. I didn't get to see it, but she said that was great. And that's all I got about stuff that's been seen.
All right, so we have delayed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Next,
that's about the right starting time, though.
Yeah, yeah. We're about 13 minutes in. Next week, we are going to do, what did we decide, four rooms?
Yes, four rooms.
We're going to do, okay,
Quentin
so the
Tarantino
next, yeah, the next block. 4 weeks, we're going to do a block of Tarantino movies. So we're going to do Four Rooms, Jackie Brown, Inglourious Bastards, and then
Django
Unchained. All right. So this movie. The next three days.
We're doing the next 3 days today, by the way.
Which Paul Haggis, the director, was in the news not too long ago.
Oh, really?
Over this past week.
What did he do?
He was speaking out against the church.
Oh, well, what a big surprise.
The Scientology church.
Oh, well, still. Is he a former member?
Yeah, apparently he had a very public breakup with them a couple of years ago. And he's said some things, and the church has said some things back, and apparently it all kind of cropped up again, and he basically said, yeah, it's his words were that it was somebody to the effect that, yeah, it's very culty.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's go figures.
Wow. Yeah. For those of you who have had a chance to, if you can catch a showing of The Master, which is kind of a rather sideways look at this Church of Scientology. It don't come out and say it in so many words, but boy, it's awful dang close.
That looks really good.
Yeah,
I want to see it. Be forewarned, it's a very chatty movie. It is not
chatty.
It's a lot of character building dialogue. It's not a lot. There's very little action. It's okay, a character driven story.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's like watching a train wreck. You just can't take your eyes off it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Great.
Very compelling.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. To the editor of that teaser trailer, congratulations. You made an awesome trailer. So the next 3 days.
So the next 3 days, high level thoughts. What do you got?
I'll let you guys start.
All right, I'll go first. I very seldom do. I liked it. I liked that there were questions that weren't ever really answered in some respects. And it's nice to be reminded every so often about how good an actor Russell Crowe really is.
I struggled to get through this movie. The thriller movies just ain't really my journey to start with. But outside of, you know, Russell Crowe and the main cast, which did a pretty serviceable job, I just could not get into it. It was just not me.
Just not for you?
Just not for me.
That's fair.
It's...
Yeah. I was actually... I selected the movie because I saw it, didn't expect anything, rented it not knowing what it was about, and came away very blown away by it. Probably because maybe because my expectations were high for it.
Right.
But plot elements, there was a certain moment where I didn't know if he was deluding himself into believing he could do it or if he was actually going to do it. And that to me was very interesting. And I don't know if that was the movie serving it up that well, but I bought into it.
Yeah.
And there was a lot going on there.
There was so much going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also liked the very technical aspects of... Now, granted, we probably haven't tested any of the methods he uses, but it seemed that...
Maybe we haven't.
They did a pretty good job of offering you enough prima facie proof or just strands of evidence. You go, okay, I buy that he goes from this point to this point. And then he goes from B to C,
yeah.
And he gets to where he can actually pull it off.
Yeah.
And then I guess the last point I'll just make is that it feels like movies that I think they made a lot in the 70s that aren't made really so much anymore, mm-hmm. and Man Against the System, but more believable because it's more of the everyman story. And I think I've read in some reviews, because I looked at the reviews after I saw the movie, I was pretty blown away by it, and that, well, it was completely unrealistic or whatever. I think that's kind of the point.
I think...
They don't hide the fact that he's an English teacher, and they kind of make a big issue about it. And I think the point is to ask the question, is a person who tries something that crazy a Don Quixote or a... Is that possible? And I think my old final point, now I'm sorry I keep talking, but I have hated every Paul Haggis movie that he has ever directed that I've seen before this. And so when I found out it was by him, I was in complete shock because I was like, wow, this director's great. Who is this? And granted, all I've seen is Crash and In the Valley of Ella. But I thought those were, I don't know, soft, you know, feel good, unrealistic,
you call Crash feel good?
No, not feel good. But what am I saying? It's kind of, I'll say it is the fantasy of a bleeding heart. Those two are bleeding heart fantasies. And maybe this is a bleeding heart fantasy too. But it's done very well.
So
I wouldn't say it's a bleeding heart fantasy. I would more say that this is a man who is terribly in love and has a sense of justice.
Yeah.
And he's not going to let the system just accept what it gave him when he knows the truth is there.
Yeah.
Now, in that one scene where he's with her in the county jail and she's looking a little frazzled, and she asks him, you've never asked me if I actually done it.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
At that point, she says,
yes.
And he says, should I? And she says, would you be disappointed?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether she was just doing that just to soothe him to the fact that you need to forget me, or she was just angry at the fact that he's so damn dedicated to her that she just cannot reciprocate that love back.
And I think there's a lot
just hurt him and push him away.
I think there's a lot going on there, and I think it's what makes this movie better than the other Paul Haggis movies. Because somehow it's centered in a reality of characters.
Let's talk a minute about other Paul Haggis movies.
Okay.
Because I'm looking at his filmography right now.
All right.
Not just directing, but writing.
Okay.
And looking at his writing credits, holy Christ, this guy has some deep writing credits.
Well, that's good.
He goes all the way back to The Richie Rich Scooby-Doo Show, Heathcliff Plastic Man Comedy Adventure Show, The Love Boat.
Wow.
He's all over the place there. Yeah.
Different Strokes.
Oh, wow.
One Day at a Time, Who's the Boss, Facts of Life.
Well, yeah, he's
if you helped write Who's the Boss, Paul Haggis, I got to give you mad props.
30-something. I'm skipping around now. L.A. Law.
Well, L.A. Law.
A lot of TV credit there.
A lot of TV credits up until the 2000s. Walker, Texas Ranger.
Nice.
That's a sidetrack.
I'm a little surprised that Walker he wrote an episode of that show.
He wrote many episodes.
Wow.
Well, I'll give you credit. The TV writing.
Oh, wait a minute.
Well,
I take that back.
Honed your skills.
I take that back. He's the creator.
He created Walker, Texas Ranger.
He is listed as the creator of Walker, Texas Ranger.
Wow, Paul Haggis, I really had you wrong.
Now we've mentioned Playing Crash.
Type.
Yeah. We've mentioned Crash. Million Dollar Baby.
He wrote that?
He wrote the screenplay for.
But that's another one where I kind of feel... I mean, that's not a bad movie, but that's another one where I'm like,
he wrote the screenplay for Flags of Our Fathers, which I was not the biggest fan of Flags of Our Fathers one. As I was of Letters from Iwo Jima. Yeah. He wrote the story of Iwo Jima.
Okay.
But he's not credited with the screenplay on that one. Casino Royale.
Nice. That's a
good
one.
Quantum of Solace.
That's a good one, too.
The Next 3 Days, which he did the screenplay and...
The direction.
The TV show The Black Donnellys, which he was a creator for.
Basically, I'll just put it like this.
In the Valley of Ella.
I didn't like his political movies, period.
In the Valley of Ella.
His political movies are completely unrealistic, downright cynical, in my opinion. Bleeding Heart Fantasies.
That comes from the TV.
Yeah. Yeah, it comes from 80s television, writing a lot of 80s television.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I feel that way about Flags of Our Fathers.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about that movie. It's very schmaltzy and sentimental. And considering Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima, those movies, very similar to another project you and I are working on, those movies are
two pieces of a whole, yeah,
but very different. And one is super schmaltzy and super, you know, flag waving, beating our chest, hoorah.
I probably would actually like that movie.
It's not anywhere near the movie that Letters from Iwo Jima is.
Which is a smaller, personal story about a bunch of guys knowing they're going to get that.
And I really enjoyed that
That's a good movie. I really like that one. Which Clint Eastwood directed.
Right.
Both of those. He also... Well, he's credited with the creator of the Walker, Texas Ranger Trial by Fire TV movie. So.
I was pleasantly surprised at how well-crafted, I think pretty deep, and frankly well-directed this movie is. One of the better movies I've seen in the last few years. I really enjoyed it. I've seen it several times now.
It has the feel of being a really small, low-budget movie, but with really good production values.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of the feel of it, because it is kind of gritty and...
Well, there's no real embellishment of it. You know, this is the story of one guy.
Yeah.
The fact that it makes a deal that he's, you know, an English teacher, but he's an English teacher with a PhD, so that means he knows how to do research, which he does put those professor skills to work in researching his subject.
Yes.
Like he's writing a thesis.
Yes.
And he goes out and seeks experts in the field.
And there are so many moments where perhaps this is just a product of really telling a good story. There are so many moments where I'm hanging on the moment, where I'm on the cliff. I really feel it. And I don't know if – I know you said you struggled to get through it, but I don't know if you thought that at least those elements were compelling to some extent.
Well, there were parts of it. There were parts of it like, okay, this guy's supposed to be smart, but he makes the most stupid moves. Okay, he goes to rob a drug house. He doesn't wear a friggin' mask.
No.
I mean, that would be my most simple thing, is to wear something that they couldn't identify me, especially since these guys have seen me before.
Right.
And what he was planning on doing was just robbing them and walking out. I mean, they already know who you are.
Like, just out of curiosity, if he robbed them, do you think they'd be able to figure out who he is?
Yes, because they can tie him back.
What I mean is, if he wore a mask.
It would be harder.
Okay.
But it'd be much harder to do it.
He wasn't planning on sticking around at that point either.
No, he needed the money because he was going to execute his plan.
The last thing you need is a bunch of dopers chasing you in addition to the cops.
Yeah, the thing is, these weren't organized drug lords. These were a bunch of dopers.
I think if I'm going to knock over a dope house, I sure as heck don't want them recognizing me.
Yeah, but at that point...
Unless he was planning on killing them all to begin with. And that was the point where he has to make the decisions. Hey, am I going to be able to pull the trigger on some of this stuff? Well, when the bullets start flying, yeah, he can.
Yeah.
When he set fire to the place, I thought, okay, now it got a little interesting here. Is he going to just let these guys burn alive or what?
Yeah. And that was an interesting scene. Because that is the scene where he crosses a line. It is. It's a remake of a French film.
Poor L.
Yeah. That's the scene where he really crosses the line. Like, if you were going to say there's a line he crosses, which I guess that's debatable given what he's
doing. Well, not really.
The line he
doesn't choose to cross is robbing the bank.
Correct.
He chooses to cross the line with a bunch of people who are already
already
criminals. I mean, who's going to care? You know, are these a bunch of guys running a crack house going to go to the cops about being robbed?
But is that a real line, though? I think there's actually a question about that in the movie. Is there a difference between him robbing a bank and robbing a bunch of criminals if he crosses that line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's just an English teacher.
Right.
And I think that's some of the great questions that the movie is asking. Like, did she do it or not?
And
apparently it doesn't matter to him.
I think this is more, and what's kind of unspoken is that this is a character study of an obsessive compulsive.
Well,
that really doesn't manifest until he's pushed, and he's pushed into that to that point.
Or maybe to narrow it, not someone who is a compulsive about it, as you're saying, because you're saying, yeah, it's not necessarily compulsive, but definitely obsessive. But maybe to a point where you put a person in this situation under extreme duress, different people will respond in different ways. And this is how this guy responded. And is it reasonable or not? It's certainly obsessive, and it's in some ways it's crazy.
I would say that it pushes to the compulsive because he is given so many outs. There's so many situations that are presented to him that give him alternatives to not do this and to live a good life.
Well, no, he cannot live a good life. He's obsessed with getting her out. He'd have to abandon her.
Right.
He can't do that because his son is sitting there totally shutting down
about
his wife. And he can't sit there and just leave her.
My argument to that
could have married Olivia Wilde, popped out a couple more kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on. Elizabeth Banks, Olivia Wilde, it's good to have those kinds of choices. I mean, so
I think your point is well taken.
But I think his son...
There is a lot
son,
of pressure from his son, in a way.
Yeah, but you know what? He adds to that pressure by not being a good father. By being a distracted parent.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that, I guess. You see that. I don't know that you see his relationship with his son all that much.
Think they should have shown that a little more.
I agree.
Because I think that would have added an interesting
element. Because I don't think you really know.
Because it really comes into play, though, when he's just like, we need to leave. We need to get you out. We'll go back for him. Because that was his call. And she's like, no.
Yeah, but maybe, well... He had a plan B. Had the parents set up to take care of the kid, and then they'll figure out how to get him later.
Right.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
No.
You know, but I do think it speaks to the fact that it was more important for him to rescue her from her situation than to spend time with his kid. I think that's true. There's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of scary, in a way.
It's dedication. He was married long before he had a son.
Yes.
Yeah.
But your responsibilities change in a way once, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say.
Well, this is what I say. The kid is in no danger. I mean, he has a set of parents, backup parents, if necessary.
Yeah.
Granted, he would not understand it. But the guy's first goal is to rescue his wife, period.
Yeah.
And like I say, figure out how to get hold of the kid later.
I guess that's kind of what I liked about the movie. The thing that we're talking about now is that. I'm sorry, Daryl.
Well, the thing is, when he consulted that first guy, Damien, in the bar, mm-hmm. the guy
Liam
told him.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Liam Neeson. The great creepy Liam Neeson.
That was really good to have somebody like that in that role. Because it's like, yeah, you broke out of prison.
Yeah.
Seven times.
Yeah.
And the only reason he said
Ra's al Ghul taken.
Ra's al Ghul taken and Qui-Gon.
Qui-Gon Jinn, yep.
And he said the only reason you got caught was you turned yourself in because you couldn't stand the idea that someone was going to break in capture you. And the guy told him, can you abandon everything in your life to do this?
Great foreshadowing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you let go of everything and forever look over your shoulder?
Yeah.
Apparently he's willing to try.
Because that's who you're going to have to become. That's what he says.
I love Brian Dennehy's character in this.
Yeah, he says, what, two words?
Yeah, but man, he's so good.
His gravitas is
just the gravitas that he carries in every scene that he's in. Just because he gives that look that's like, what are you doing?
Man, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, when you think about the kind of caliber actors that play bit parts in this movie, like Liam Neeson, Brian Dennehy, I guess it really does speak to the quality of the film in some ways, because it's not stunt casting.
No, it's really not.
So, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, there's just a lot to the movie. But I probably talk too much about it myself.
No, I like how he's presented with other options. I like how he's presented with the option of Olivia Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's not a bad option.
No.
It's like, and especially when his wife gives him the option of, fine.
Get out of here.
I did it.
Yeah.
Go away. Go live your life. Because she can see how obsessed he is at that point. I think she can see it. And she can see that it's damaging to him.
Do you think the scene at the end, the recreation, is real? Or do you think it's a possibility of what might have happened?
What do you mean the recreation? Where they
of the scene.
When the detective, when he tries to re-piece it all back together.
Now, granted, there's that button that's in the sewer there.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right.
And so it really is up to you to decide, which I kind of liked. I thought that was... I think you could take it as conclusive, but I didn't take it as conclusive at all. And I wondered what you guys thought.
I liked how the detective went through the motions.
Yeah.
And he got there and he looked and was like, man, this is dumb. Yeah. It's been years. This is dumb.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
It's like, we're never going to know the answer to this question.
Yeah.
And that's kind of I kind of got the impression from the detective, as far as he was concerned, the case is just going to be left open.
Yeah.
And they may never find them.
I think they could have dropped that whole scene together and just ended the movie right there when he took the picture of her and the boy together. And with him wondering...
I actually kind of agree.
Who's going to bust through the door?
I kind of agree, and here's why. I think it's a little bit of Paul Haggis, you know, editing his own masterpiece film at the end.
But
she probably didn't do it. It's more interesting if you don't know.
No, yes.
Yeah.
We already know.
But what I like...
The story is not about the murder. It's about...
Right.
Guilt or innocence. It's about getting someone out.
But what I liked is that he put in front of the audience that the person that should... the one of the people that should care the most about it... It's like...
Doesn't really care.
Doesn't really matter. Does it matter anymore?
Yeah.
You know? Does any of this matter in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah. That's a good point.
And so I did kind of like that. Because at first I was like, man, that's a weird scene for there not to really be any resolution to.
Yeah.
Well, no, the story was resolved. She broke out and they got away.
Yeah.
That was the story.
But I agree with you that I like, at the end, there is definitely an ominous feeling heightened by the score of the film, which Danny Elfman did, which is awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
And that... What's his next move? You're kind of like sitting there looking at him, and it's the handheld shaky cam, and he's kind of like, he's got everything he wants. Then he looks kind of like over, and he's thinking, and the music takes a minor, darker tone, and then it just ends. And you go, yeah, how long can he do this?
Well, the guy told him, the minute you run out of money, you run out of friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, how much was that truckload full of money he got?
Right.
Is it enough to survive on until they can create a new life?
Right.
But even then, you're still going to be looking over your shoulder for the rest of your life.
Yeah. It was good.
There was an interesting sidebar to this. Wired Magazine, a bunch of months ago, had a story about a guy who tried to totally disappear. The guy was, he cut off his emails, cut off his phone, closed all his bank accounts and everything, just totally went anonymous. And the challenge was, can you find me?
Mm-hmm.
How long can I stay hidden? Well, it turns out you really can't stay hidden for really long periods of time. There will be something somewhere betray you.
Well, I think they know, even if they found out where he was, though, they wouldn't have an extradition agreement in Venezuela.
True.
I mean, that's part of the reason he picked that country.
That doesn't seem to really be a problem for some law enforcement agencies.
Well, I guess that's true too, right? But are they? Is an intelligence agency going to spend?
No,
the question
but the
is,
thing
are
is,
they going to? And I think right. I think that was the point. I think that was more the point of showing the detective.
He's kind of like, screw it, I've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get to a point. I think that might have been the little, yeah, this is how much we care about this.
That's pretty damning, though, because it's if you believe that the woman that Russell Crowe saved, Elizabeth Banks' character, took the life of another woman, you're just going to let that go?
What can a local law enforcement agent do when someone has left the country?
I agree, but that's an FBI matter at that point. And then it's a question of, does the FBI secretly go into Venezuela through the CIA? I don't know if that really happened.
The thing is, though, they can essentially make your life difficult.
Sure.
Because you're always going to be vulnerable to blackmailing. I mean, how good is your cover?
Yeah.
I mean, that thing will not last forever. I mean, even though he's living in Venezuela, his visa's eventually going to run out.
Yeah.
Unless he makes another change, and you're forever dealing with the criminal class, and they're always going to have that hook in you.
How long is he going to raise his family in those conditions?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah,
he achieved his primary goal, but now the problem is, can he sustain it?
Yeah. It's very interesting.
I mean, will his son, when he grows older, want to live in that shadow forever?
Right. Right.
So, it like I say, if the movie had ended right at that one point,
without even going into the...
And I'm going into it and just left it right there.
I kind of agree with you.
It would have been a much stronger film.
Even though I did like it in some ways, I felt it was another moment of haggis, like...
Well, it's trying to give the audience some closure.
Yes, which you don't need in a film like that.
Well, that thing isn't about closure.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
It's to constantly keep the audience on the edge about everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all I got. Anybody else get...
Two of Haggis's daughters were in the movie.
Oh, yeah?
One played a junkie, and one played a character named Lila, which I don't remember Lila.
I don't remember
I think
either.
She was a little girl that the son was on playing with in the playground.
Oh, okay.
That sounds
makes a lot of sense. But nonetheless, if you're into thrillers, it's not a bad movie.
But, Daryl, you're not into thrillers.
Not this one, and not usually. I mean, I find thrillers sometimes a little too contrived for my taste.
Okay. So you would be a person... Like, I was reading the reviews saying, oh, it's not believable, it's a bit contrived. You would kind of agree.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, we set the whole premise of the film up for him to break her out, and we kind of go through this whole motion.
So you never asked the question, is this all in his head? Is he just crazy? Is he
no,
not
it's not in
this?
His head. He's not crazy. He's just very dedicated. He's just not going to accept the fact that, A, she's guilty, and B, he can't do nothing about it.
Right.
He tells her pretty much at the beginning of the film, I am not going to let you live your life this way.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if I had that sort of a problem, was in prison, I definitely would be happy that someone on the outside is spinning their wheels like mad to do everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the real tragedy is for people who are incarcerated for long periods of time, their families usually do abandon them.
I guess at some point. I really don't know much about it. Yeah, I mean, I guess eventually complacency, cynicism would set in on a person who feels there's no way out.
Well, not only that, I mean, it's one of the things he fought for. He said to keep her in Pittsburgh, they were going to send her away. The horrible truth is most convicts get transferred far away from their families to make it almost impossible for them to visit them at any time. It's the only thing that sometimes keeps these guys going is occasional visits.
Mm-hmm.
And when those occasional visits become difficult or they stop coming, that's when the total depression starts setting in.
Yeah.
And then you get the Dear John letter saying, I'm divorcing you.
Right.
Or they start losing, their parents die, or their siblings move away and live their own lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you're faced with the fact that you're going to be a very lonely person for a very long period of time.
Dale, you're going to make me cry. Do you know that?
That's why he was so desperately trying to get her out.
It's okay, guys. No tears. No tears on Backseat Producers.
Okay, I got a couple things that I still want to mention.
Okay.
One is I found some trivia that I found kind of interesting. And I'll go through a few of those things. The phone and fax numbers on the lab work are actual numbers from MedHealth Services in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, a real medical lab facility.
Wow.
The bump key technique that he used does actually work on cylinder locks.
Wow.
John prints an ad for a helicopter pilot posted on Craigslist. It was dated October 14th, 2011. I don't know why that matters. And then Mark Isom, who is normally a collaborator of Haggis, did not compose the score to this film due to their falling out over Haggis's highly publicized decision to leave the Church of Scientology, which Isom is still a member.
Ooh, my God.
Yeah, so that kind of plays into what we're
saying. And I'm a huge Mark Isom fan.
And I don't know, what has
Haggis,
he done?
Haggis and Olivia Wilde share the same birthday.
He nice. Did all the music, sometime a few years back, he did all the music for Never Cry Wolf.
Okay.
Which is a killer soundtrack and pretty killer movie, too.
Okay.
Some of the his best-known work is on the Threshold of Liberty. He composed all the music for the Statue of Liberty rededication back in the 80s. He's done a lot of soundtrack work for movies.
Point Break. Well, he was a producer and did the original.
His a very Tate. Orchestral and instrumental ambient music.
Nice.
If you've heard, go to YouTube and look for Threshold of Liberty. You've probably heard it in 1,000 commercials.
Okay.
He composed the opening credits for Chicago Hope.
Nice.
He did the music, of course, for Crash. He was the score producer for the remake of Fame. He did the music and the piano solos for Reservation Road.
I don't know that one.
That's the one I'm thinking of. The Crash TV show and the TV show he composed the theme music for Once Upon a Time, the TV show that's on now.
Okay.
So the other thing that I wanted to bring up was the one action sequence in this that was so jarring and so seemingly out of place that it was like a super holy shit moment when she tries to pull out of the car and he reaches over and grabs her and the car is spinning out of control. I was like, what's gonna happen?
So you were on your toes.
That got me. Just because the movie was so sedate before that, I think it was one of those things that it was just such, it kind of came out of left field. It wasn't out of place, but it just kind of came out of nowhere that, you know, this movie really didn't have a lot of high action. And then this one scene that's just crazy and insane and goes to show just how super lucky.
At that point, he's already sprung her.
Yes.
So there's a lot of high tension.
There was a lot of high tension.
I guess there wasn't a lot of, like, action, so to speak.
But yeah, there was a lot of suspense, tension, the monster under the bed kind of tension. It's like, are they going to get caught? Are they, you know, where are the police coming from? And then that chase scene happens, and then she starts leaning out of the car, and they spin out of control. And it was just like that. I mean, it was just all this tension had built up for so long over the course of like the previous 20 minutes or so of the movie. And then once that scene was over and he pulls her back in, it was like this huge relief of tension that then built back up as they were getting onto the plane and all that, you know, then going after the boy, getting on the plane, all of that stuff. So, yeah, I really liked that sequence.
It was cool.
It was a little unrealistic, but so what, you know? At that point, I was so invested in the story, you know, my belief had been suspended, and I wonder if
it serves only to exhaust you so that when they do come and get the kid, you don't feel that it's out of place.
I think the story earned it at that point.
Okay.
That, yeah, you know, she was willing to throw herself out of the car when he was like, no, this is not part of the plan.
Yeah.
So he had to change plans.
Yeah.
Because she was that serious about that.
Yeah.
Because his plan was his plan, and he was locked into it. But if she wasn't going to go along with the plan, then everything he just did is for naught. So he has to. He's fully invested in it at this point. He can't go back.
Daryl, thoughts?
Nope, I have none.
Well, I mean, I thought it was a cool scene. I think the computer animation was a little to be desired. I think that much I remember. Not that it matters.
Yeah.
But But I do remember feeling like you were saying, as you just kind of like take a deep breath And then when they go to get the kid, it's like...
It all just amps back up.
Oh, you know, well, you know, I mean, because there is a slow moment there where she's looking at him and Russell Crowe's like, hey, we got to go. And you're kind of like, yeah, you know, time's ticking, lady. Why aren't we, you know, why aren't you guys moving? But in some ways, the balloon pops with that prior sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not really, like, thinking about that as much.
Yeah.
And so you're just kind of, like, taking it all in, I guess.
You don't get so as frustrated with her. And for a minute there, the way everything else had played out, it almost felt like this was going to be her one last chance to see her son again, hug him, and say, I'm going back.
Right.
I'm out. This isn't going to work.
Right.
You can still live your life. You'll get some jail time, and you'll be fine. But I'm going to be a part of the system forever. You almost get that sense there that she had kind of – she was so defeatist that it almost looked like she was looking for her way just to get that moment and then just get back out.
Yeah.
But at that point, then, she's along for the ride too.
Yeah. That makes sense. You can become defeatist from the inside of a cell.
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly.
I imagine so.
I mean – That would be unbelievable. So, but yeah.
All right. I think we've hit the end.
Yeah. So next week, Four Rooms.
Four Rooms.
One of which is Quentin Tarantino's.
That's right.
Yeah. On Netflix, I saw some mixed reviews. I saw that apparently some people hated the first two stories, but the last story is worth the whole movie. And so it ought to be interesting.
So we're going to give this so many rooms out of four?
Is that
what you want to do?
How many rooms did you enjoy?
Cool. All right, we're out.
We'll see you next time.
See you.